Let's turn to Psalm 91. Psalm 91. And this psalm speaks to us of being free from a spirit of fear. It's the most, has the most in it of anywhere in the Bible, really speaking directly to fear. I had shared with you a few years back how the Spirit of God showed me in a time of prayer that in the future there would be times of waves of fear. And it would be three triggers, one of which being unknown diseases, another terrorism, and another fear of financial lack, ruin, and so forth. And presently, in the world right now, there is another wave of the spirit of fear, and it's relative to unknown disease, this coronavirus, and the unknowns, not knowing to what degree it's going to affect or afflict or anything else. And it's interesting how much people can get in fear of the unknown, really, is a large thing relative to fear overtaking people. Now, if you allow a spirit of fear in your life, First John 4:18 says it brings torment. There's torment to the soul, there's no peace. But also, when people get into fear, they're easily manipulated and controlled. So therefore, people who have given themselves to evil will use fear to manipulate people. It's been written about communism. There was a man, Matthew Malai, wrote a book, Russia as it is, it was called, this was back in the 80s, he got out and he wrote, but he said communism, that was over the Soviet Union, had two pillars to it. One was envy and the second's fear. And they try to say, oh, well, it's not right that someone has more than you. You know, so it would feed envy, so people would rather have nothing than someone else have more than them. Now, that's an insane thought process. You would be much more pleased to have nothing than someone have more than you. And what that does, it takes away all incentive to work harder. See, here, with a capitalist society, if you work harder, you can earn more and better your life. And then in love, you can be a blessing to others to a greater degree. You're limited how much you can bless others if you don't have anything. Now, we can always bless people with a word of encouragement or comfort or something like that. But when it comes to that which it would take money to purchase, like food, for example, if you have more, you can bless more. I remember hearing a woman once say, well, why should people want more? Well, obviously, that person didn't really know the love of God in terms of being a blessing to others. She was a me first person. You know, her words identified her. Because if you have more, you can bless more. Now, the thing is, how much can you have till you love it more than God? You know, you're not throwing the crumbs out instead of the whole loaf of bread throwing out. I always think of my wife when I begin to talk about that. When we had two peach trees. They're dead now. But one year we had this bumper crop harvest of peaches. And I was out there picking all these peaches and carrying them up to the house. And I come up with another basket. And she has baskets on the floor. And she's separating the peaches. I already had them in baskets. But I'm saying, what are you doing? So I'm picking out the best ones to give away. I'll never forget that, Don. I mean, that was her first thought. She sees all these peaches on the floor in the basement there. So she's going to pick out and go through all of them, pick out the best ones to give to the neighbors and everybody. You know, in my own selfishness, I would have picked them out for us and give what's left to the neighbors. Okay. I'm just being honest, you know. So I was convicted that day. It's like, yeah, I need to keep that in mind. So anyway, if you are more blessed, you can give more. Not to crumbs, but you can give in a good way and be a help and a blessing. That's not the object of what I want to share this morning, but I'm just saying here, people have fear come. Fear will keep you from doing what you want to do and what you need to do. If you're afraid you won't have anything, you won't give anything away. So often as the fear comes in, people, they cling to things. And in terms of the world's economy, money flowing keeps it going, has to continue to be spent and flow. So you have fear of economic problems. You have fears with terrorism. And every now and then, you know, there's a shooting or something like that. And people get all up in arms and riled up, and then they forget about it. When I was in Sri Lanka here, I asked about that with the terrorism there, because last Easter there were, I believe it was 9 terrorist bombings, and there were churches targeted. There was also some like 4 or 5-star hotels where foreigners would come in. And actually one of the churches, Pradeep went there as a boy. His father went there, preached, and took him with him. And it was 50 kids killed, because there, you know, the buildings aren't that big, and the kids might meet outside under, you know, like some palm branches or something for shade. So the guy was stopped, didn't get into the church. So he walks over where all the kids are and blows them all up. Of course, himself included. So I asked Pradeep, well, you know, how are things going relative to that? And he said, oh, about a month afterwards, people kind of forgot about it. I was sort of surprised, because that's how people are here, because there's a lot of affliction and hardship. So when it passes, they just kind of forget about it and they're trying just to be happy. Well, you have terrorism bringing fear. You have economic woes bring fear, whether it's on a national level or someone gets laid off from their job and fear starts to grip their heart. And then you have this with diseases, and we have this coronavirus thing going on, which, you know, was it perpetrated or what? Who knows? And that doesn't really matter that much. I mean, it may have been a lab virus with the intent to do terrorists with it. You know, there are diseases that can be spread and wipe out populations. That's just a reality. An EMP bomb, electromagnetic pulse, could wipe out the electrical system, the whole East Coast. All they have to do is explode a nuke like 100 miles up in the air. It'll wipe out everything. I don't say that to bring fear. I'm going to bring faith here to the situation. But these are realities. Realities of dangers that we have all around us. And you'll have people that are worried about this coronavirus, but the common flu kills 30,000 to 60,000 people a year, mainly bringing pneumonia on and so forth. And, you know, people are killed in car accidents and so on and so forth. As Christians, we want to be free from the fear of death, which Jesus gave his life to conquer him that had the power of death, Satan, to set us free, who are all our lifetime subject to bondage, to set us free from the fear of death. And that's what Hebrews 2:14 through 18 brings out. We don't have to be in bondage to fear. Fear torments. The devil likes to torment. Now, I like to use animal illustrations at times. And we had cats at a certain point. And we had one that was a really good mouser. I mean, she was a good mouser. And she wanted you to know. She wanted us to know she was earning her meals. So if she caught a mouse, she'd bring it in the house to show us. But I saw her at times catch a mouse outside. Now, cats are nice pets. But there's a few ways it can be a picture of the devil, okay? I'm not saying cats are devils. I love cats. You know, don't try and kill cats. To me, that's devilish. To unnecessarily want to kill anything other than roaches, flies, and rats maybe, but snakes. But I mean, aside from those things, that there's a direct link to devils. You are called names, Lord of the Flies and the Great Serpent and all of the rest. But this cat would catch a mouse, and then she'd play with it. And she'd let it walk away like about 3 feet and then pounce on it, pick it up again, smack it around. You know how they like to do it. They like to box. Box the mouse alongside the head a couple of times, knock it silly. pounce on it again, let it think it's going to go free. That's just how the devil is. If you're in his grasp, he's going to torture you before he kills you. He's going to smack you around a little while before he decides, well, I'm tired of this now, I'll just kill you. And that is how Satan is. You don't want to give place to the devil and let him mess around with your life. Well, what the cat would do is after she got bored with it, she'd just pounce and bite it and bite his head off or whatever and kill it. And then maybe bring it in the house. But she brought live ones in already too, just to show us, like, hey, I'm earning my food. I don't look at that other lazy cat over here in the house. If she's earning hers, but this one was mouser extraordinaire. Well, Satan will use fear to torment, and he enjoys it. It's sick. I hate seeing a spirit of fear on people. I mean, it just grasps my heart. And I've already, going to pray for people, and they're curled up on the floor in a fetal position, ready to have a heart attack. And it's just so sad. We don't want to give place to it. We don't want to allow it in our life or in our soul. And Jesus provided the victory for us over a spirit of fear. In the covenant we have with God, everything's available to us. Now, we're going to have to stand in faith, release faith, confess our faith, obey God, walk with him. But what we would need when we understand the covenant of God gives us all we would need, the thing I need to be concerned about is, am I walking with the Lord? Not to be afraid of what's out there, but am I walking with the Lord? That needs to be my concern. To find Psalm 91. This is the Psalm of Protection. And protection was given to us in the Old Covenant, and it rolls over into the New. You'll hear me say repeatedly, because it's very important. That's why I repeatedly say what I'm about to say. The Bible is a book of two covenants. The old covenant provided blessing in the physical realm for everything of our life. The new covenant provides spiritual blessing for every part of our spiritual life. But it also includes the blessing of the old covenant. And protection is one of those things. And sometimes our protection could be expressed with the word deliverance. He delivers us out of trouble, out of evil, out of danger, or he might protect us from something coming upon us. And it's important our minds very much renewed to the fact that God is with us. There's a promise of protection, and he's given his angels to carry that out, to protect us. It's very important that we have a consciousness of that. And the more we're aware of danger, the more we need to maintain a consciousness of the promise of protection. So in light of hearing things, hopefully it didn't overtake any of you, but if it did, I'm believing for freedom today and freedom from whatever you're going to hear tomorrow, next week, or next year. Because we do not need to allow a spirit of fear upon us for any reason. Well, Psalm 91, he that dwells in a secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. He gives this illustration about under the shadow and under wings. And in the bird world, mama bird protects the young ones with her wings, and they will like crawl in under. And you could see that whether it's like geese crossing a road or birds in a nest or whatever the manifestation, the mama bird wants to protect and it'll come under her wings. So we have that picture. It's like a bird, a little peepy bird being under the wing of its mama, or maybe some bird's father does that. But that we're under his wings, there's a protection. But we see immediately there is a condition to the protection promise. And he says, if we dwell in a secret place or that hiding place, there was a movie made years ago called The Hiding Place. Corrie ten Boom was the lady who, during World War II, when the Nazis were capturing and seizing Jews and having them sent to death camps and killing them, there were people who made hiding place. And the Ten Booms actually I think they were Christian nature, and they were hiding Jews, and they built like a secret place in their house where they had a wall in front of a wall. And they were part of a group of people that were helping Jews escape. So they would, that was like a safe house or a stopping place. They would come in there and they would feed them and so forth. And they had, they would run drills that if there was any sound or visual of the Nazis coming in their direction, because they lived in a village, they would make everyone, you know, like hide your food or whatever, and rush up into the hiding place. And as long as they were hidden, they were safe. Well, eventually, I don't remember the story, if someone ratted them out or they just were found out. Were they ratted out? And someone betrayed them. And then they were captured and they were sent to prison camp. And her father died in the camp. And it was Corey and her sister. And her sister was a strong believer. And they were beaten rather brutally at times, and then doing the slave labor. It's, I mean, the whole thing's a true story. There's a book and there's a movie on it. And Corey had a hatred for the woman prison guard who was real savage, you know, and hateful and beating them. And her sister walked in love and was always exhorting to forgive. And they, her sister prayed for deliverance from this, and here their barracks got infested with lice. And the Germans, once they found out these girls had lice, they wouldn't come in, rape them, or beat them, or anything, because they didn't want to get lice. And her sister, what was her sister's name? Betsy, right? Betsy, she was praising God for the lice. Sometimes something can seem like a negative, but it's actually working for your good. She's praising God for the lice because it kept the German soldiers out of their barracks. So it's a matter of perspective sometimes. Well, anyway, the lice were like a deliverance to them. So sometimes, you know, God might bring protection or deliverance in a certain way. It might not be how you're thinking. Well, the story went on, and actually Betsy died, and then Corey had to learn forgiveness and the whole thing. But I highly recommend either the book or the movie. It's very inspiring. But there's a place of protection for us. If the Jews, they were sneaking out, were in the hiding place, they're okay. But then it became exposed. And then you had a safety zone from the lice through Betsy's prayer. It was actually their answer of prayer. I remember Kenneth Copeland sharing once, if you were asking God for a new tie, you know, you don't go and tell him where he should buy it. I mean, just thank God he gave you the tie. In other words, however God wants to bless us, we need to receive it as it is and not, well, it's not good enough. It's not this name brand. Oh, okay. So now you have a lack of gratitude for the blessing of the Lord. Well, if we dwell in a secret place and abide under the shadow of the Almighty, or we will abide under the shadow, his protection. I'll say of the Lord, he's my refuge, my fortress, my God, in him I will trust. Surely he shall deliver thee from the snare of the fowler, from the noisome pestilence. He shall cover thee with his feathers, and under his wings shalt thou trust. That's your safe place. His truth shall be thy shield and buckler. Thou shalt not be afraid for the terror by night, or the arrow that flies by day. You'll not be afraid by the crazy demon-possessed Muslim guy who wants to blow you all up. You'll not be afraid of the person who's got demons who wants to take an AK-47 and blow everybody away. That's my translation there. Nor for the pestilence that walks in darkness, or the destruction that wastes at noonday. 1,000 shall fall at thy side, 10,000 at thy right hand, but it shall not come nigh thee. Only with thine eyes shalt thou behold and see the reward of the wicked. Because thou hast made the Lord, which is my refuge, the Most High thy habitation. And there shall no evil befall thee, neither shall any plague come nigh thy dwelling. No evil shall befall thee if you're abiding under the shadow of the Almighty, and no coronavirus is going to come into your house. Translation. For he shall give his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all your ways. They shall bear thee up in their hands, lest thou dash thy foot against a stone. Thou shalt tread upon the lion, the adder, the young lion, the dragon, shalt thou trample under feet, because he set his love upon me. Therefore I deliver him. I'll set him on high, because he's known my name. He shall call upon me, and I'll answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life will I satisfy him and show my salvation. There is a repetition here of promises about protection. No plague will come nigh your dwelling. Pestilence is not going to overtake thee. Do you know, I don't know if everyone's heard about this, but I'm just now hearing about it. There's a plague of locusts that's happening right now, coming out of East Africa, going across the Arabian Peninsula into South Asia, even as far as India. And I've looked at pictures of these swarms of locusts, and it's like darkens the sky. I mean, you know, people taking a picture of somebody in a field, and all you see is these locusts. And locusts will devour everything that's green. They'll devour crops. That's a present day thing. And, you know, you wonder, was this like a judgment from God, or what is this? What's going on? You know, we have to be careful we're not quick to draw conclusions. It could just be, you know, a circumstantial thing of the earth being in a fallen state. And it could be a judgment of God. You know, God sent locusts as part of the judgment on Egypt when he said, let my people go. So we'll see. But places can be completely destroyed of their food supply. And this is going on right now. In fact, those locusts are probably more of a threat of human life than that virus. Because if you wipe out a food supply, you could end up with a whole people group starving to death. So these things are always going to be in the earth, just like Jesus said, you'll always have wars and rumors of wars till he comes. You'll have wars, rumors of wars. You'll have things like this. But the interesting thing, our stock market, which was booming, lost, I don't know, maybe like 15% this week of the wealth went, it disappeared because of fear. One thing and one thing only, fear. Nothing's been disrupted yet, but the fear of disruption. And now they're kind of bringing out the problem. A lot of our meds are made in China because it's cheaper. So you could have like whole things that are produced in areas where this is a devastation get cut off. So out of that comes the fear of economics collapse, of people panic sell. That's happening. Well, not today because the market's closed today. Happened every day this week. All in this fear. And when I was in India, I sort of found it. They're like really wound up in fear about this. Israel was telling me, oh, so much fear. And Ralph came along, was going to minister in the orphanages, and they said, no, no foreigners. It was a decree. No foreigners are allowed to be around children for any circumstance. So they're trying to protect, but without the Spirit of God, without knowing the promise, the covenant promise of protection, and there's something unknown. This is an unknown disease. They don't know, you know, how fast will it spread, how great are the ramifications. I mean, right now there's maybe a 2% death rate, they say. Could be higher, could be lower, who knows. But you have this going on and fears being propagated. Then you have people in political positions will drum up the fear, use the media to drum up the fear to then get people to do things they want them to do. There was a certain political person that had a D in front of his name that said, never waste a good crisis. This was three or four years ago, I think this was said, never waste a crisis. And that was so revealing because these people will use a crisis to manipulate. Like, for example, terrorist attack, 9/11, take away freedoms. Oh, well, we have to protect you. So now we're going to legalize the government spying on all of its own citizens. That exists today. That's pretty scary. Because there's been a lot of people who found they were being pressured to make a confession to a crime they didn't commit. And they can fabricate accusations. They can create things that didn't even happen. There's the technology. They could take your words and make the same frequency of your voice and actually create that you said something you didn't even say. Well, we have it on tape. And they made it. Well, you always have things out there, but there's people that will utilize that which would bring fear to manipulate and control people. And it's very, very evil. It's very demonic. Fear is Satan's tool. It's not God's tool. Well, he says here, you're going to have the pestilence. You're going to have plagues and such things, terror by night, the arrow that flies by day. And we have to be very purposed to stay free from any of that getting on us. Now, the way you do, it's not don't turn the news on, because you can't just be ignorant and pretend things aren't out there. But we have to turn on the Word of God in our heart. It's not that you don't hear anything bad. It's that for whatever bad you're hearing, you need to hear the word of faith relative to that and be strong in that, that you're strong in the face of it. I like verse 7. Though 1,000 fall at your side and 10,000 by your right hand, it shall not come nigh thee. Sometimes when people hear about numbers of people being afflicted, then the panic starts. But we need to hold fast. It doesn't matter how many people die around me or get sick or whatever else. God's word to me is still true. And I will be protected. I will continue to stand. It doesn't matter what happens around me. Because, you know, a lot of fear gets spread with this, like, we're always going to be a pandemic, an epidemic, and all this. It's going to just spread. And people fear that happening to them. And you still remember when we had that bird flu. We didn't have it, but it was in India when we were there in the north. I don't know, was that maybe 10 years ago? And they killed all the chickens in those couple northern states where we were. They killed every single chicken and buried it. So we were relegated to rice, noodles, potatoes and bread. Morning, noon, or night, whenever we ate, that's all there was to eat. They killed all the chickens because your proteins was the eggs and the chickens. And outside of that, everything is being destroyed. It's like, you gotta be kidding me. But that's how much fear came upon the people of that place. Fear brings torment. Fear can cause you to do things you would not normally do. But we have these promises here. No evil shall befall thee, verse 10, nor any plague come nigh thy dwelling. And we want to stand. Don't wait till you're in the middle of the storm, but build faith today for these things, for the protection of God. I always will think of Randy McMillan. Anytime I read Psalm 91 or speak from it, I think of Randy McMillan, because back in the mid-90s, assassins, professional assassins were being sent to murder pastors, political people and business people, and a lot were being murdered. And there were assassins sent to kill him and his wife on more than one occasion, and God delivered them. And some of his pastor friends were killed. He was going to a pastor's like conference meeting, and he was a photographer person. And he would take his camera with him when he went places. And here his pastor was shot and killed right in front of the church. All these pastors were coming. He was is like his best friend, very influential. He takes a picture of this guy laying in the street and faxed it to me. I called him. I said, Randy, what are you going to do? And he said those words I'll never forget. And I say it now and then whenever it fits to a message. I always repeat it. It's worth repeating. I feel safer in a will of God than in a safe place. The safest place is in the will of God. You can try to have the safest place and crazy stuff happen. When our son Jesse joined the Army, and he was in Texas at Fort Hood, and that's one of the largest Army bases in the United States. You would think one of the largest Army bases in the United States would be one of the safest places on the planet. But there was a Muslim demon-possessed nut job who actually had, I think he was a captain, so he had took a firearm with him, went in and killed, how many was it? 13. The one young man Jesse witnessed to the night before. He was supposed to be in the room when it happened. He was supposed to be in that room the moment it happened, and his sergeant, the last second, just felt this impulse to go over here. Took them over like the next building for whatever reason, and God delivered him out of that. So you can be in what you think is a safe place, and danger can still be there because there's devils, there's sin in people, there's hatred. You have all these things. There's diseases. I mean, you have all kinds of things. You can be what's in a safe, who you think's a safe place, and still have danger. We need to trust the Lord no matter what. When we're more conscious of the danger, we'll tend to think about it more. But really, this should be a part of our daily life. Lord, the covenant promise of protection's mine. And really, you know, we talk about lots of stuff in a 24-hour period. The Word of God should come out of our mouth at times. I mean, at least while you're standing there taking a shower, or while you're driving the car or going to work, you can confess the word and be releasing the power of God. Well, I feel safer in a will of God than in a safe place. Wherever you are, there's the potential for danger or evil. We need to be in prayer. You know, when that happened at Jesse's base, they went on lockdown right away, so no one could call out or communicate. And I quote my wife, she said that was like the longest hour of her life. But then after that, it's like, well, hey, God protected him. I mean, I'm quoting you, okay? So make sure I say it right. It's easier to quote yourself. You quote somebody else, you'll make sure you're saying it right. But you didn't worry about it after that because, well, the Lord protected him there. You know, what difference is if you're in a battle zone in Iraq or Afghanistan? And when you see a victory or you see the manifestation of God in an area, your faith gets stronger. So as you go through things, we need to allow it to strengthen us all the more. And generally, that's the way it is. If someone's dying from a sickness and they see the Lord's healing power, they'll tend not to be afraid. Well, the Lord did it here. He can do it again. What do I have to be afraid of? I know the Lord in this way. And many times, you know, the fear of danger can be very big in people's mind. But as we are aware of the Lord's presence and his angels' ministry to protect and deliver, our faith gets stronger for those things. And I'll just repeat again. Going to Columbia in 1996, the end of the week, the ministry time's over, and I look at my plane ticket out. This is before internet, and I see there's a mistake on my plane ticket. I'm like, oh, no. So Brother Randy Mack, he says, oh, I have my daughter, I think her name was Sarah, drive you to the ticket office. So we're driving through Cali, Columbia, size of Philadelphia, and it was like I was in the movies, clear and pleasant. clear and present danger of Harrison Ford. I mean, it was like that. She gets lost. We're going down. It's like, this is not where we belong. And three guys from one side, three and another, jump out in front. And as a guy sticks a knife to my throat, she screams. I got a gun, and somebody ripped off her necklace. And in the next moment, they all run away. And, you know, I had my ticket in my pocket. I'm ready to go home. This guy grabs, first thing he sees, grabs my plane ticket. I grab him by the wrist. It's like, I'm going home tomorrow, buddy. I grab the ticket out of his hand, and I'm staring down a knife. In the next moment, they all ran away. There's no police. There's nothing out there to make them run away. They all run away. And when I got back home, I encountered five people in the church that the Holy Ghost told them at that exact moment in time to pray for me. And the one brother actually was feeling sick, went home from work and was praying. The Lord showed him in a vision someone holding what looked like a sword or a long knife to my throat. I thank God, my co-believers, friends in the Lord, that the Lord spoke to, that they prayed for me and obeyed God. Because I am absolutely 100% convinced my angel or angels manifest themselves, that these guys saw these, whatever, 10-foot tall, 400-pound angels, you know, with knives and whatever. I don't know what they saw, but I know they saw something. Because there was no other reason to run away. I mean, they didn't get any money from me. They didn't take my wallet or anything. I mean, if you're going to stop a car and hold people at knife and gunpoint, you think you'll at least take their wallet. In Colombia, they'll take you. You know, kidnapping went from what used to be, you find the daughter of a heiress, Patricia Hearst was kidnapped, I think, and her father owned some big newspapers out in the West Coast. You go after a rich person's kids, it's because you can get more money. Well, they changed all that because they'd have to cart them around and then risk getting caught. They started capturing what they would call gringo, which is North American. 24 hours, $20,000, you produce it or they're dead. We're not going to haul them around. 24 hours, and they'd have an amount they think the average person could come up with, like $20,000. And either you produce it or they're dead. That's what was going on back then. And anyway, the Lord manifests his angels. They could have just took me. They could have taken my wallet. He didn't even get my plane ticket. I grabbed it out of his hand. But the manifestation of angels, not just testifying to that personally, but having had that happen, I have far more confidence than before that, going on missions trips, going places that in man's mind, well, that's a dangerous place. I remember a few years back, I went to a place of business, was getting something. I knew the man that owned a business. And he said, oh, are you going anywhere soon? I said, oh, yeah, I'm going to Ukraine. And he says, well, aren't you afraid? I said, no, why should I be? Is there a reason I should be? Well, you know, there was stuff in the news and all of that. I knew what he heard. But the safe place is the will of God. If you know, in China, there's a lot of medical people have died. There are some doctors that died. And you think of a hospital as like a safe place relative to disease because there's remedies there. But they were exposed and they died. It wasn't a safe place. So I'm just trying to bring illustration. As you see the Lord's deliverance, you see his protection, your faith gets stronger. Now, whether you actually experience that or not, we all can see it in the Word because that promises to every one of us. Yes. It's not, you know, just to certain people. But we all have that promise. So we look at that. We remember that. You know, Brother Randy said, I live in Psalm 91. Now, it just so happened where he lived, the home he had, was in the middle of where all the cartel people lived. I don't know if that's a good place to have a house. Because being there, he said, don't carry your camera out the house. If they see you, they will take you and the camera. He said, I had it happen 3 times already. Do not carry the camera out the door. Because the cartel people are all paranoid. They think you're going out to photograph them. Give it to the CIA. If they will take your camera, they might take your life. Well, the more we hear testimony of the Lord from whoever, of his divine protection, it's good to hear those things because it stirs our heart. What the Lord did for that person, he can do for me. He doesn't have his favorite kids. What he's done for one will do for another. Now, here there's some conditions in a sense. We need to abide in him. And we need to say of him, he is my refuge and fortress. What do you say about the Lord? He is my refuge. He is my fortress. In him I will trust. Your words carry power. The ministry of angels, they're not there for you to command. That's a wrong teaching. Some people teach that. Psalm 103 verse 20 says clearly, they hearken to the voice of his word. As you speak his word, then they're released to be able to work in your behalf. If we're going to speak fear and worry and evil thoughts like that, well, then the devil's free to operate. But if we speak the word of God, then the angels can operate. So part of our daily speech needs to be, Lord, you're my refuge and my fortress. My God, in him will I trust. There was a movie made a few years ago by Clint Eastwood, I think, made this. I forget the name of it right now, but it was about a guy in World War I who was a conscientious objector. And he refused, he was Seventh-day Adventist, he refused to carry a gun to kill anyone. And he went through a lot of persecution, and then, and this is a whole true story, he ends up being a medic. And he saved, like in this one battle, like 75 guys he drug out that were wounded and saved their life, risking his. But he was believing God for protection. And the one part was so funny. I mean, these guys were like beating on him and everything, boot camp. They hated him. Like, well, you're a coward. No, he just had a conviction. I can't kill. But towards the end of the movie, because he prayed and he heard from God and God protected him, there was a command coming down the command, like for them to go into this battle. And the guy's giving the message back, we're not released to move yet, something like that. He was saying, we can't move forward yet. And the commanding officer is going through the radio. He's saying, why? I command you to go in that battle. Why aren't you going? Well, Private such and such didn't hear from God yet. And this guy was commanding the forces there, not the higher up, but the one on the ground. He got to where he wouldn't move unless Private so-and-so said, God said it's okay. Oh, man, what a testimony. What a testimony that was. But he believed God. Now, when you go into war, there is the potential everyone can get killed. Though 1,000 fall at thy right hand or 10,000 the other hand, no evil shall befall thee. That's the mindset we want to have. Regardless of what's going on in the world. You see, the world does not have this protection we have. They are subject to the devil's whims. They are subject to whatever comes along. But we don't have to be. We live in this world, but we have a covenant with God. And that covenant provides us with protection. Surely he will deliver thee from the snare of the fowler, the noisome pestilence. Thou shalt not be afraid of the terror by night, or the terror from Muslim extremist terrorists, or the arrow that flies by day, or the AK-47 being fired into a crowded place, nor for pestilence, or for the coronavirus, or the bird flu, swine flu, MERS, SARS, or any of the rest of them have come down the pike here. Verse 9, because you've made the Lord, which is my refuge, the Most High, your habitation. Our life's in Him. We live our life in Him. Just knowing about the Lord doesn't take fear away. But when you surrender your life, you give yourself to Him, you live in Him, you live in His promises, what's there to be afraid of? The angels be given charge over you to keep you in all your ways. They'll bear you up. A couple years ago, before Dale went to Ukraine, where he was going there more than he was here, the Lord had me give him a prophetic word about the ministry of angels was going to bring deliverance, divine protection, and don't expect that. Yeah, and he's had times there's been hits put out by people in government to kill him. But God delivered him out. They went to the battlefront where the Russians were. New churches were popping up because men were going there to fight, and they'd go like a few months and come back home a few months. Unpaid volunteers to save our country. And churches were popping up. And they went down in there. And we need to have an awareness of the ministry of angels. And again, it begins by believing His word. Lord, your angels have been given charge over me. They will keep me in all my ways. Now, that being said, we don't tempt God and we don't put ourselves in danger outside of the purpose of God. That's tempting God. That's what Satan tried to get Jesus to do and said, jump down, you know, throw yourself down here. The angels will bear you up. And the Lord said, thou shalt not tempt the Lord your God. Verse 14, because He set His love on me, I will deliver him. I will set him on high because he's known my name. By identifying with Jesus Christ and His resurrection power, we know the power of God that raised Christ from the dead. And that same Spirit dwells in us. As we set our love upon Him, our life being given Him, we have an ease of faith to trust God for what He's promised us. He will call upon me and I will answer Him or respond to Him. Many people fear, well, if I cry out to God, but what if He doesn't hear me? What's plan B? There is no plan B. Cry out to God. He's listening. He's listening for you to call upon Him. And He says, I will be with him in trouble. This is a psalm I think is very worthy to commit to memory. You know, your mind will only hold so much. This is good to memorize because if you sense danger or you're encountering, you're in trouble, you want these things to be able to roll out of your lips, these scriptures to roll out. Begin to speak them forth. I will deliver him. I'll honor him. With long life will I satisfy him. Well, how long? What's a long life? It's a life lived to do what he's purposed for your life. For Jesus, it was just 33 years. What he had to do was done. But for us, long life, you know, you can be a blessing, your children, your grandchildren, great-grandchildren, to the community around you. We should have more to give as we move forward in life because we should always be learning and growing, learning and growing. It's such a shame to me when someone in the ministry like quits and retires, say they're 60-something. It's like, man, you're just getting started. You spend all those years gaining more of an understanding and revelation and stronger in faith and you're going to just stop? There are some professions, so to speak, that you need the older, wiser people. You know, the medical community, from what I heard, a lot of doctors were quitting when all this regulation came in and said, we're just tired of all this. We'll just take retire a little bit earlier. And I get it. They can get tired of that. But I think to myself, you can't replace 35 years of experience with a test. You have a human being that can say, I saw this about 50 times already. I know what you're dealing with. There's some things when it comes to wisdom and experience, you don't easily replace that. And you have people, even our own military, stepping back. And you have people that don't have the wisdom and experience to really know what it is to lead into battle. So there's a lot of professional areas where the person with more experience is very valuable. Very valuable, very precious. And for you to live long life, you know, after you raise kids and become a grandparent, you really want to help. You know, you have to be a little bit careful. You don't step into where you're not asked. But you learn a few things. It's like that first go-round is like a training time where you can really help people. The sad thing is when you have younger people aren't really interested in the wisdom of the older person. Now, some people are just old fools. I'm not saying everybody older, but as someone gets older, they should have learned more and have more to give, more wisdom to impart. It's a wise person who will seek out those who know something in an area they don't know to seek that out and ask questions. You know, even like for me, I go on missions trips. I want to say, find the old people, say, tell me your testimony. What I'm thinking is maybe I can learn something from them here. Maybe they've had a revelation I've not walked in yet. Maybe they've had a certain experience that glorifies the Lord to strengthen me in my spirit. Long life. The reason for long life is not the fear of death. We're free from that. We have heaven in front of us. But the long life in love, you can be greater blessing. I have worked, this is how my point of view for me. I have a work to do. The work of God in my life is the criteria for how long my life was designed of the Lord to go. When my work's over, beam me up. Okay, I'm ready to go. But there's a work to be done. Therefore, there are things I need to finish that. You need a certain amount of finance. You need health. But you need protection. So my expectation when I get on an airplane is it will take me to my destination. It will not break down midair. No terrorists is allowed on my airplane. I pray for the pilots. Lord, may they be competent and sober and walk in the training that they have. May the mechanics take care of this airplane before we take off. May they do their job in all competence. I believe I'm going to the other side. And that's what Jesus was saying. We're going to go to the other side and there's a storm in the way. And he rebukes the storm. As we live for the purpose of God and the plan of God and the will of God, then there's a lifetime to be lived to see that fulfilled. And therefore, I need protected. It's not about, oh, God, I don't want to die yet. Oh, God, I have my bucket list. No, it's, oh, Lord, you have a plan and a purpose for me. And you need to keep me alive, Lord, as you're promising your word that I can do all that you've ordained for me to do. And there's a place of faith. You know, when you take that approach and that attitude, there's a place of faith you can step into that you're not worried and fear about everything. Praise the Lord. We have great and precious promises. A promise that no evil shall overtake you. That he shall deliver you. He shall give long life. Amen. The Lord's our refuge.